Happy Tuesday. Welcome to Capital Investment. It is also St. Patrick's Day. Fun fact, I did a DNA test. It sounds like a song, right? I did a DNA test. No, Joe, you are not the father. No, I did a DNA test, and I thought I was a lot more Native American than I am. I'm 10%. Okay, so posse caucus, here I am. But also, I am 46% Irish, which I found just mind-boggling. So I am totally celebrating this year's St. Patrick's Day. I am all in. Kiss me. I am Irish. all right, then. So do we have, let's see, Vice Chair Frederick, can we get a motion to approve the minutes for March 12th?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right, seeing a motion, anybody got questions, comments, concerns about the March 12th minutes? No? All right, minutes are approved. Thank you, Vice Chair Frederick. All right, we are moving on to a very busy day today, and we have Representative Meckland is going to present a bill first because he's got important things to do after this too, although everything we do around here is important. And this is a very important bill that you have in front of this committee, House File 3599 for the Becker Water Treatment Facility Improvements.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Franz and Chair Lee and members, I am pleased to carry House File 3599, which authorizes a $1 million in bonding from the state for the design phase of a much-needed water treatment plant in the city of Becker. The city of Becker is around 5,000 in population and needs to financially partner with the state to build a new water treatment plant to address contaminants and provide clean, safe water for Becker residents and businesses. House File 3599 is the first step to address this public infrastructure need in Becker. And Madam Chair, I have a testifier with me, which is the Mayor of Becker, Mr. Mark Colbert.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor. Please state your name for the record and you may proceed.
All right. Good morning, Chair Franson and Chair Lee and members of the House Capital Investment Committee. I am Mark Kobinger, Mayor of the City of Becker, and I am grateful for this opportunity to speak with you this morning. I want to start by thanking Representative Meckland for his strong support and advocacy for the public infrastructure needs of the City of Becker. We understand that your committee has spent hours learning about water infrastructure needs across the state. Like many other communities, the City of Becker needs your help to begin with the design of a Becker water treatment facility to address iron, manganese, and other contaminants. As a city of approximately 5,000 residents, we're unable to build a new water treatment facility without state assistance. Large capital projects are very difficult for a community of Becker size, and with the phased retirement of the Sherco power plant, we will be losing 60% of our tax base, along with one of our largest water customers, which compounds the issue for us. The city has spent close to 20 years and hundreds of thousands of dollars searching for additional water sources. We have tried to find water in at least 11 different locations with numerous test wells. Despite our best efforts, new wells have been difficult to come by, with the only suitable sources having high levels of secondary contaminants, which require treatment. Becker's geology has several conditions that hinder municipal well creation, including shallow bedrock and no confining layer of soil. Because of this, all of our current city wells are considered highly vulnerable. We continue to pursue other funding sources for plant construction, but this request will help the city to prepare plans and specifications for a new water treatment plant and put us on the road for clean drinking water for our residents. On behalf of the City of Becker, I thank the committee for its consideration of House File 3599.
Thank you, Mayor. Members, do we have any questions? Oh, yes, Chair Kosnick, go ahead.
Thank you. Could you just clarify, maybe I missed it. Did you say you did identify a specific parcel property, or you're still searching?
Mayor.
Oh, excuse me, Madam Chair. We have identified several different areas where we found test wells, but the most current ones that we just put in, two wells, are very high in iron and manganese. So we do need to, before we can put those online, we would need to treat them.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, thank you for making your way down to the Capitol and testifying in favor of this bill. And now we are going to go to DPS.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. All right. Commissioner Jacobson and Superintendent Drew Evans, welcome to the committee. You may state your name for the record and proceed with your very exciting PowerPoint presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Bob Jacobson. I am the Commissioner of Public Safety. It's my honor to serve in that position. And again, thank you for inviting the Department of Public Safety here to present our capital budget request for 2026. As you can see, I'm accompanied by Superintendent Drew Evans from the BCA. Some of the next slides. Before we dive into this capital request for 2026, just wanted to provide you some updates on some of the recent projects that have been funded by this committee. You can see in this picture, this is the State Emergency Operations Center that's located in Blaine. Our staff moved there and to the SEOC in May of 2025. And as you certainly are aware of, tragically, it was the first utilized to manage the response to the events of June 14th, the assassination of Speaker Hortman and her husband, and the shooting of the Hoffman family. That was the initiation for that facility. It has been used numerous times since then. It does provide critical resources and space necessary to manage that crisis, all crises, and ensure effective collaboration. Finally, I just want to thank this committee for their support for the BCA Mankato Lab project from last year. We broke ground on the new laboratory this past fall, and the facility, as you know, is expected to be completed by next year. I want to continue to thank you for your support for these important public safety facilities that serve the entire state of Minnesota. And with that, turning to the capital budget request for this year, the governor and lieutenant governor have put forward a strong proposal to help address those current issues and the future needs for public safety in Minnesota. The DPS law enforcement division serve every community in Minnesota, and expanding the lab in Bemidji will help evidence turnaround throughout the state of Minnesota. So with that, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Drew Evans from the BCA to provide some more detail on this project. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Superintendent Evans.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I will note my gratitude as well to all of you for the support for our Mankato facility that is underway right now. In fact, the pictures in your packet are dated. It's going up very fast. There's block up in that facility now, and we are on track to open that facility in March of 2027, and it is well underway. And what we are here before you today is to talk about a project we talked about last year. As well, to round out laboratory facilities in particular for the BCA. Our existing facility in Bemidji, Minnesota is about 26,000 square feet, and it operated originally with about 20 staff. We currently have 44 staff in the building and are expected to grow over 50 and would be fully occupied with about 60 people in that location. What this project would do would add on 27,000 square feet for a total of 53,000 square feet at that facility. For comparison, Mankato is about a 55,000 square foot facility, so this would give us a northern regional office and laboratory facility comparable in size to the Mankato facility being built. And the recommendation is $48,833,000 in the governor's bonding proposal. Here, $3.65 million of that is for design of the facility, and the remaining funds would be for construction costs. This is a rendering of the building. I want to thank you as well. This might have been a lesser known piece of what you passed last year, but you gave us the authority to purchase land for this building up there, and we are in the process of completing that sale right now. And as you look at this rendering here, that would be allow us to build that building on the left-hand side of this picture, a rendering, so that we could build a new building, connect the two, and then we would be able to have the least amount of disruption possible to our testing services in Minnesota. Our laboratory provides testing services in all 87 counties across Minnesota, even those counties that operate labs. There's certain disciplines that they do not complete, and so we serve the entire state of Minnesota. What's driving this is our demand for DNA analysis, just as an example, has been a fivefold increase over the last 20 years. 5,000 items were submitted for testing in this laboratory in 2003, and at the Bemidji laboratory, we had 12,000 items submitted, and that trend continues to this day. DNA analysis has really become the gold standard of forensic testing, and we continue to see demands for testing in that area. And we've had over double the number of cases for testing for drug chemistry in that time period. We also have high demand for digital evidence. When this building was built, including our headquarters location as well, there was no really digital evidence that's done. I'll show you a picture in a bit, but we have our digital evidence lab. in a closet right now, a true closet in Bemidji. I know a number of you have visited that facility, and we thank you for visiting as well. We need to get them in a better focused area for this particular work. Most of what they're doing is examining child sexual abuse material for us. It's difficult for them to be with that material to begin with. We need them in a purpose-built facility at that location. And as noted, our staffing has tripled since 2001. We also have created, since this building was built, a standalone use of force investigations unit that was bipartisan support, that they focus on use of deadly force in Minnesota. We need to keep them in dedicated facilities as much as possible based on the discussion that's been had here. And then specialized space for evidence storage and aligns with accreditation requirements. We're pursuing accreditation for our law enforcement functions at the BCA. We actually next week have a visit coming by our accrediting body, and this really helps us in that process as well. Some of just the ideas, I've already touched on digital evidence. There's also the new wave that's coming that we want to see expanded across Minnesota is rapid DNA. This is DNA in 2 hours or less. It actually works well. It would be a hub and spoke model, but we need dedicated facilities to be able to review some of that and our approach to this. And then a firearms database program, which is we called NIBIN, National Integrated Ballistics Information Network. We have one machine in Bemidji now. We would like to have greater access to our law enforcement partners, but we need some expanded space to be able to do that quite the way we'd like to. And then as you can see, a number of these other things that I've already touched on. Last of which in this is that we do have a training room there, but it's not quite the size needed to hold regional trainings. We are in the process of, and we have implemented this in most areas of the state, we want 90% of all of law enforcement within 60 miles of a regional training facility. We train about 6,000 to 9,000 law enforcement students through our programs each and every year. We want them within that hour so it saves them on hotel costs. They don't have to drive to the metro area where we do our training all the time, that they can go back and forth. It allows law enforcement not to have to backfill shifts, that they can go more than they would from there. So this would kind of double the size of our training room at that facility as well to provide that low-cost education for Minnesota law enforcement as well. These are just some pictures of that facility. It's cramped as is. That instrumentation should be a little bit further apart. We have things stacked on top of desks simply because we're out of space at that location. This is an example where you see that TV monitor. That's the closet. That's our digital evidence location. And then those cubicles are DNA. They're cubicles for our staff as they're analyzing data. That's supposed to be a conference room and library that we've had to put cubicles, so it's difficult to meet with attorneys and other law enforcement as they come and meet with us as we're down to one conference room in that facility, so it would free up some of that space as well in that location. I want to note as we go through, this is not funding, you know, as we go through this, the BCA, it's a regional asset for Minnesota law enforcement. Everything we do is serve our law enforcement partners, and if you're at any of these facilities, our headquarters included, you would see law enforcement coming and going each and every day because that's who we serve, and they utilize these facilities for that. Evidence turnaround time, you have done a wonderful job of supporting us and providing the funding necessary to be able to get our turnaround times to a really good number. We continue to creep up, and the concern and why the criticality of this particular project is now is that we're completely out of space. Our headquarters location is designed for 366 people. We have about 540 people in that location now. We will open Mankato a year from now with about 50 positions down there. We will backfill as we have openings in headquarters to alleviate some of the congestion that we have there. The same would be done for Bemidji. We would simply repurpose positions back up to Bemidji out of headquarters to alleviate the overcrowding that we have at our headquarters facility. And the concern we have is that when we get to the position where we have to add additional staffing, we're completely out of space. So getting this project in the pipeline, when we get to the point where more staffing is necessary to keep turnaround times at an acceptable level, we need the space to be able to do that. If this was just about law enforcement, we would find other facilities that we would rent. The laboratory is what drives this. We've looked at retrofitting other buildings, and it's just as expensive to do that as it is to add on space at a standalone facility that we already have now. Because of the necessary redundant HVAC, the coolers and freezers that are necessary along the way, and this is something that's certainly a regional asset already, and we want to be in that area for a long time to come. So this would be the timeline for this project. We completed the pre-design. We've been working on this for a number of years now in 2021. The design would be done if the funding was available in 26 through early part of 27, and then we'd begin construction in September of next year in 2027 with occupancy of that new facility space in September of 2028. As noted here again, the pre-design's already been done, and we're in the process of purchasing that land with existing funds that we'd be able to put that facility on. The design and construction costs would be the $46 million, which is the accurate number. I think it was a little bit off on the first slide, but $46,833 is the total cost from there. And this would be the operating.
We're going to have to.
Yep, please. Yep. I read it the last slide, Madam Chair. This would be the impact, as I know you like to see, on the operating adjustment, and then happy to answer any questions along the way.
Well, first up, we have Representative Scraba, which is no shock to anybody.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Have you or do you still work with federal agency law enforcement?
Commissioner or Superintendent Evans?
The commissioner can answer that question, but I'm happy to, Madam Chair. And Representative, yes, we continue to work with federal law enforcement. In fact, as the tornadoes blew through Bemidji last year, we housed the FBI because their facility was impacted. So that training room I referenced, we made a way for them, and we continue to work with them on all kinds of different activities day to day.
Okay. Representative Scraba?
I was thinking more in DNA because they have a vast array of DNA stuff. Do you guys work together and the database and things?
Who would like to take that? Okay.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative, great question. So, you know, as the members know here, Red Lake Nation is in that location. The FBI does investigations on there. We do most of the DNA analysis for the FBI work that's done up in that area. We do a lot of forensic analysis for our partners in federal. And the reason we do that is they have their own labs. It usually takes them longer, and the crimes that they're committing impact Minnesotans across the state. And so we readily will do that work in partnership with them.
Thank you. Representative Scraba, you're good? Okay, anybody else? Okay, Representative Carroll, and then we got to move on to the next presentation.
Very quickly, are you incorporating any alternative energy in this? If you mentioned it before, I'm sorry, I missed it.
Superintendent Evans?
Madam Chair and Representative Carroll, you know, my understanding in this project is we'd follow the same B3 design requirements that are required of these facilities. There are some of those in Mankato, so I would anticipate that would be part of this project as well. I don't know what they'd be. As we went through that process with Mankato, to meet those energy requirements, that it can be met a couple different ways. I don't know the specifics because the design's not been done, but we would meet those B3 design requirements.
I do have a question. When those designs are done and you have the B3 requirements all settled, could you just give us what the increase of the costs of that are?
Madam Chair, yes, we'd be happy to
okay,
do that at
great.
That time.
Thank you. All right.
Could I just finish up very quickly?
Okay. Very quickly.
I defer to you.
Quick.
I wanted to thank you for your.
I agree. Thank you. All right. Okay, moving on. We now have Bowser, the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. For those that don't know the acronym, please make your way to the front. And then you may state your name for the record when you are ready and proceed with your testimony. And we are going to give you 15 minutes. Yep, 15 minutes.
Thank you, Madam
That's
Chair.
That's with questions. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm John Jasky, Executive Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and Ian Biafish, Assistant Director, is plugging in our PowerPoint here, so we'll get that set up and get to going.
Can you just speak into the microphone so we can hear you? I'm kind of deaf. It's hard for me to hear.
Is that better?
Yes,
okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, just a little bit of history on our agency. You know, we've been doing these types of projects for quite some time. I think very successfully. You can see here just a bit of background on our mission and how we do our work. We're happy to present to you the governor's recommendations this year. There are two of them, and before a little bit of introduction, Ms. Fish will take on the first one, and I'll take the second one. The common denominator on each of these is that there are statutory programs. In the case of one of them, it's a mandate to the agency, and the other one, it's an opportunity to leverage significant federal funding. The other common denominators are we work in partnership with local governments, in one case with soil and water conservation districts day to day, and the other with many local road authorities around the state. And we also work with, although it's not included in this proposal, an existing agreement we have with our Department of Transportation to accomplish weather mitigation in partnership with them to be most cost effective. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Fish to cover the first item.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Andrea Fish. I'm Assistant Director for Strategy and Operations at Bowser. I am here to present our bonding request for the Local Government Roads Wetlands Replacement Program. Many of you have heard this program before your committee before. This is our statutorily mandated program when local government road projects negatively impact wetlands. There is supposed to be some sort of remediation or wetland replacement. This is done at the state level largely because it's more efficient and cost-effective to manage it at the state level rather than having individual local governments trying to manage the road projects separately. There's some benefits to state level administration of this program too, in that we can provide for larger and higher quality wetland mitigation. It's more cost-efficient, and of course it provides for expedited permitting as well for these local governments, as we tend to have a credit bank for them available rather than them trying to find their own wetland credits or create their own wetlands to generate those credits. The governor's capital budget request for this year is $5 million in general obligation bonds. We would hope to use this to purchase easements to restore and permanently protect between about 100 or 140 acres of wetlands, which would generate up to 80 wetland replacement credits to fulfill those permitting requirements. To give an idea of how that impacts the state, we wanted to bring up this map that shows the different bank service areas within Minnesota. Within these BSAs, ideally if a road project is taking place within one of these, they would purchase credits within their existing BSA or be able to use available credits. There are some areas in the state that you can see are highlighted red, at least in this presentation, where the anticipated demand exceeds the next year's supply of credits in those areas. Recent analysis showed that we would need about $35 million to address existing demand and an ongoing $9.5 million annual need for ongoing demands for wetland credits in Minnesota. One thing that is a little different with the wetland replacement credit is that the time to generate a credit, if you're looking to generate one new, it can be 8 to 10 years from appropriation to a final credit release. So local governments do like to have a stable, predictable amount of wetland credits available either in their BSA ideally, or at least somewhere nearby so that they can plan their local government road projects. In 2024, the Board of Water and Soil Resources and Department of Transportation created a working group to go over challenges and opportunities with funding this program long term. They had determined that an ongoing general fund cash availability as well as bonding was the best way to provide for that stable and predictable level of wetland replacement credits throughout Minnesota. They did do a report that is available on our website. If anyone is interested, we did provide that last year as well.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'm going to shift to the next item unless there's any other questions on this particular one.
Yep, go right ahead.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members. The next item is the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, which is a partnership with the federal government, with USDA. The way this works is that the federal government pays for the initial 15 years of the cost of a project and the restoration costs, and the state provides the additional or the supplementary piece to turn that into a permanent conservation easement to, as you see here, different practices that are improving water quality and providing habitat and water storage, and you can see what those look like here. Just a couple of examples of those. You know, most of these are accomplished in very sensitive landscapes or areas that have had some impact. In this case, you can see restoration, in this case, the structure at the downstream end, of course, supports a very large pool of water being reestablished or a big wetland upstream to hold that water back for, you know, benefits downstream as well as the habitat benefits on site. This USDA agreement that we referred to was updated a year ago. Governor Walz signed this agreement, and it added, you can see here, a few more counties to the eligible area. Of course, this applies over the agricultural parts of Minnesota. The landscape that we're aiming at is this marginal land that's been altered for cropping, and we restore it back to its natural conditions. This agreement also added some practices to protect drinking water more fully, in addition to the other water quality and habitat benefits that that agreement is structured for. Madam Chair, with that, I will end, and we can take any questions that you may have.
Okay. Yes. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Jashke, last week we had the cancellation report, and it showed about $500K remaining from an appropriation in 2017. If we repurpose that, extended that and repurpose that, would you rather that go to local road or to CREP?
And who would like to take that?
I can take that, Madam Chair. Of course, that'd be your decision. I would say that we should start with repurposing it for the purpose that was originally intended, probably as a priority, as the way we typically would move those things in terms of continuing funds that have been previously appropriated.
Okay. Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and nice to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the work you do. I was looking at your RIM sheet, and then it looks like counties that you're working in. I understand why Ramsey County isn't, but I just drove up and through. I went to Trollhagen the other day, but it looks like there's, like, Washington County doesn't have any activity for RIM, and then the county north of there, which I don't know. I'm sorry. But I'm just kind of surprised because it seemed like it was very, you know, just make a lot of sense there. And then being so close to the river, just be a great area to protect, I would think.
And
yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, yeah. That of course, that's Chisago County, just north
Thank
of Washington
you.
County. beautiful place. Certainly, we have other RIM programs, and you mentioned RIM. Thank you for bringing that up, because Reinvest in Minnesota is a statutory program that we use to secure this Conservation Reserve or CREP agreement. A lot of acronyms, I understand. But we do have other funding that we do utilize through that program in those counties, Representative. I can give you more information on that if you'd like a report on where we've used those funds under that program and from different sources.
All right. Representative Scrappa.
Thank you, and thank you for the work you do. I try to promote you as much as I can in my district. You guys are the boots on the ground. When we give money to Board Soil and Water, it actually gets done, as some other agencies. If we give $1 million, you might get 100,000. I give you $1 million, I get 990,000 done. So appreciate that. But one of the concerns that I've had since being the mayor of Ely on an airport project, watching wetland replacements and things like that, it just seems so crazy that a government agency says you got to buy a wetland credit from another government agency that has to come up with the money, that, and it seems like if they're all government, why are we spending money on this? Is there a better way, a more efficient way to deal with these wetland credits than just passing dollars amongst agencies? Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Would you like to take that again?
Madam Chair, Representative, you know, it probably is another committee discussion because of the policy aspects that you're referring to, both at the state and the federal level, too, which we want to make sure we pay attention to so we can get the most efficient use out of this, as Ms. Fish was describing. Perhaps I can come visit with you and give you some more background on that, and we can talk more about some ideas that you might have.
Okay. All right. Seeing no more questions, thank you for presenting in front of our committee today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up, we have Minnesota State Academies. Mr. Wilding, are you here?
Hello.
All right. So, Mr. Wilding, you may proceed with, state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I am Terry Wilding, the superintendent of the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and the Blind in Faribault. Some of you have visited our campus, but I do want to take the opportunity to just explain what our program is. We are a very unique state agency as we are a school slash state agency. The unique funding challenges that we face, hopefully this will continue to understand why we need your support. We have two campuses in Faribault. One is focused on deaf education, one is focused on blind education. We are one of the oldest public schools in the state of Minnesota. We were established in 1858. We provide statewide services, so we serve all the state, not just focusing on the Faribault students, but also throughout every county in the state. We have 63 school districts currently that we serve, and a few from the outstate area. We serve kids from age 0 up to age 22 in special ed services, special education. All of our students are on individual education plans. We look at their growth, assess their accommodation needs, and provide those services in educational ways. We also have a residential program. Some of our students can't commute on a daily basis, so we do have a dorm that is provided overnight supervision 24/5. We have specialized staff who provide student support and instruction and additional resources for their specialties. Some of those students will attend one campus, some of them attend both campuses. We have students that are both deaf and blind, and they commute back and forth between the 1 mile campus duration. Our day students do go home during the day and commute, and then we have 40% that do stay on campus in our dorms in our residential program. They usually arrive Sunday night or Monday morning and then go home on Fridays. Currently, our funding is unique. Most school districts can levy bonding referendums. We are not able to do that. We depend fully on the legislature for any allocation as it relates to bonding and renovating our buildings. The support, asset preservation, plus our construction bonding requests this year are... Actually, I'd like to back up and just see how we used our asset preservation in the years past. Last year, we got $1.5 million. And we have applied that to different projects, looked at renovations. $451,000 has either been used or is already in process and encumbered into projects that we are concurrently working on. You can see throughout this list that some of those immediate needs, such as piping issues, leaking roofs, we address those quite quickly. Other projects, we are working in being more planful. As we look at this summer, we will use up probably 95% of that asset preservation fund that you gave us. That will maintain our campus. This year, we are asking for the same amount as last year and the previous year. We have three requests that we are looking at. The MSAD Student Center pre-design funding, MSAB therapy pool and related renovations, as well as asset preservation funds. If you notice that you will see costs are escalating in inflation, so we worked with REX, real estate, and they had suggested that we increase this amount this year due to those increased costs to inflation. So making this last a little longer. At the deaf school, the student design has increased in the amount. Our older buildings on our property, we have a 90 to 100-year-old buildings. There's lots of issues there. They're not accessible. They're difficult to maintain. They're not energy efficient. Replacing five of those buildings into one student center will give us campus facilities for PE, cafeteria, as well as our career tech education and vocational classes will be combined into the student center. That will set us up for the next 25, 30 years and reduce our AP costs as we continue to renovate those 100-year-old buildings. It will also assist with staff maintenance. Our current buildings are quite old. Some of them are not accessible. We are not able to use them fully because they are not set up by code. Those that have challenges, such as physical challenges, cannot access those limited buildings, such as elevator access. There's many stairs in those older buildings. We do hope to have a single floor facility that would be accessible for all. The limitations that we are seeing is many of the programs that we want to offer our students. Our career tech building has been closed for about 15 years. We are not able to use that. So some of the classes we are unable to offer as options for our students to develop their skills in work transition areas. If you see this map where you have the X's, those are the buildings that we would look at replacing, removing on our footprint to one singular building, reducing the square footage, reducing the energy that is being used. Moving on to the therapy pool at the blind school, we have a swimming pool for therapy of our students. Many of our blind school students also have physical handicaps, such as wheelchairs and limited mobility throughout the day. The water is a place that they can go in, stretch, and use those muscles and relax. The pool is 60 years old. It's hard to maintain. There's accessibility issues. We have one singular lift chair to get our students in and out, and we've used a lot of AP money to keep that up and running. What we'd like to do is a walk-in zero-gravity pool that would eliminate the lift and make it more accessible for our students to access. The cost for maintenance and upkeep would also reduce if we would choose to move forward with this project. In the last 4 years, we had three different projects that we used to maintain the pool. It also, when the pool is being repaired, our students are not able to use it, which affects their educational programming. We are requiring some cooperation with Department of Corrections as they are right next to our blind school campus. We would have to work with them because what we would envision is that they would suggest that we would close off one of their access roads, and we would work together with trying to figure out how to redesign the road configuration so they can still have access to their back lots. You can see the yellow square. That is what we would envision as the possible area for the new pool construction. And you can see the line of yellow. That's where the Department of Corrections and us have discussed that that would be the possible access road. It would bypass going through our campus if we would build that road. Lastly, to wrap up, we are asking for asset preservation funds to continue maintaining our 100-year-old buildings, our security, our accessibility, our upkeep of our buildings. Currently, what we are noticing an increase in pipes that are very old and at the end of their life that need to be replaced. Our fire security system, external buildings, prioritizing those life and safety and accessibility, and then looking at program needs. We're hoping to reduce the responsibility and burden on our staff with having these three projects approved. Most of our buildings, as I mentioned, are quite old prior to the ADA being approved. So there's many issues that we have addressed. They're not up to code. And as we renovate some of those buildings, we have to meet our current code. 65% of our buildings right now are in fair or poor condition. Some of them are in crisis. The log of about 18 to 20 million is what we would need to renovate all of our AP needs. We're only asking for 2.5 to look at the immediate needs, and then hoping with the two construction projects, if those are funded, that AP backlog would go away. The goal is to meet state and federal guidelines and standards for our students. Giving you some examples on where we've used your investment that you've given us in AP. We have less than $500,000 in our AP accounts. In the last few years, we use the money that you have dedicated to us. We invest back into our buildings. We look at the quality and the security, as well as access and safety. You can see on this list the projects that we have accomplished in the last few years, just to maintain our campuses. The goal with the bonding projects as we improve those areas, the reduction of request in AP will reduce. We'll be more efficient, we'll use our money more wisely, we'll reduce our square footage, which reduces our maintenance staff, reduces our energy needs. So the goal is funding all three projects will reduce about 100,000 square feet, and it would make it much more efficient in our running of both campuses. Thank you for your support, and if there's any questions, I'd be willing to take those at this time.
Members, do we have any questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you so much for testifying today, making your way down to the Capitol.
Thank you all.
All right. Next up, we have Representative Igo representing the great city of Hibbing. House File 3761. Please make your way to the front. Is there no Representative Igo? All right. Well, then we will move to Representative Robbins. I don't know. Sorry about that. He's not here. Representative Robbins, we will hear Independence. House File 3523, U.S. Highway 12 Safety and Mobility Improvements. Very exciting.
It is. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning.
And lovely color green on you today.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. I didn't realize your Irish background.
46%.
I heard that.
Oh, no, 46. Am I more Irish than you? Oh, you are. Oh, well, whatever. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I'm literally 46% Irish, so that's what my DNA says.
And he's clearly kissed the Blarney Stone.
Ancestry.com. What's that?
He's clearly kissed the Blarney Stone.
Uh-huh. Something like that. Okay, Chair Robbins.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I am happy to be here with the Mayor of Independence, Brad Spencer, and our Chief of Police, Matt DeRose, to talk about HF 3523, which would provide $4 million for bonding for Highway 12. This project predates my representing this district. They have been waiting and waiting for these safety improvements, so we ask for the committee's support for this project, and I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Thank you, Chair Franson and Chair Lee and members of the Capital Investment Committee. I'm going to argue that as an Asian, I lived in St. Paul for 6 months, so I'm officially a little bit Irish today, too. So, thank you very much for hearing this very important bill to help us finish our city's portion of Highway 12. The subject of our plea is a roughly five-mile stretch of U.S. Highway 12, originally constructed in 1936, that bisects the city of Independence, running from Maple Plain to the city of Delano. It's arguably the oldest stretch of unimproved highway in Hennepin County. Reconstruction has long been needed to address the outdated design and the heavy traffic volumes, but more importantly, it is needed to address the serious safety concerns. Highway 12 has been affectionately known as the corridor of death, due to its reputation for serious head-on collisions and fatalities. 12 years ago this May, the Highway 12 Safety Coalition was formed, comprised of leaders and advocates from the cities along the Highway 12 corridor. From the outset, the coalition focused on building awareness of the safety challenges along the corridor and fostering collaboration with all our regional partners. Okay. Through coordinated advocacy, data analysis, persistent engagement with transportation officials, the coalition has helped ensure that Highway 12 safety became a priority at the regional and state levels. Over the past decade, the coalition has played an important role in advancing both short-term and long-term safety improvements along the highway. Early efforts helped support interim measures such as improved signage, enhanced pavement markings, targeted enforcement, and education campaigns. A roundabout at the intersection of County Road 90 and an overpass at County Road 92 were completed in 2021 and 2022, respectively, with some of your help. While substantial progress has been made, important work remains. A MnDOT corridor study completed in 2021 identified the additional safety improvements needed along the remaining stretch of Highway 12. The final step to widen the old roadway, improve sight lines, and safety are essential to completing our vision of a safer, more reliable transportation corridor for the thousands of vehicles that use this highway every day. We are committed to getting this work done, but we need your help. With me here today is Matt DeRose. He is our Director of Public Safety for West Hennepin Public Safety Department, who can share more on the safety issues this stretch of highway faces.
Okay, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Franson, Chair Lee, and members of the Capital Investment Committee. My name is Matt DeRose, and I am the Director of Public Safety for West Hennepin Public Safety, covering the cities of Maple Plain and Independence. We know what works. Proven common sense improvements such as center medians, wider shoulders, turn lanes, and modernized intersections, to name a few, have drastically reduced fatalities on similar corridors across the state, including to our east on Highway 12 from County Road 92. The lane delineators that are currently in place in the stretch of highway through Independence were meant as a temporary fix in 2019, but they seem to have become more permanent than planned. We frequently help MnDOT with traffic on this stretch so the delineators can be replaced after being struck, which is highly indicative of continued unsafe driving behavior and near misses that continue to occur. There's an opportunity in front of us here to prevent further tragedies that we know are likely to occur in the absence of significant safety improvements. I thank you for your time and consideration of this much needed improvement on our stretch of highway.
All right, thank you. Members, Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's two of us here, Representative Hansen and myself, that served with a U.S. congressman out there, I think in Independence and Delano, and it just seems like it'd be a perfect project for him to fund federally. Is that a possibility?
Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Lilly. So it's a state responsibility.
Okay, Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very quickly. Thank you for bringing this bill. I don't live very far from there. In fact, we used to take our kids to the apple orchard out there, one of the many out there. And we would take county roads because 12 was too much of a death trap. So thank you. Hope we can do it.
Thank you. Okay. We love your support.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Rep. Robbins, Chair Robbins, and Mayor Spencer. Does this project require any greenhouse gas mitigations?
And who would like to take that? Mr. Spencer, Mayor Spencer?
I'll take a swing at it. Yeah. According to the conversations we've had with our MnDOT experts on that, there is some study that has to calculate the approximate amount of gases that are created by the project or increased by the project, and that the results of that haven't been brought back to us from MnDOT.
Well, thank you, and I just highlight to the committee that when we're looking at the numerous projects that we have just in this committee's request, when you get that report back, it's going to be burdensome and jack up the price of this project if it's not already included. I'm hearing as high as, by MnDOT's own standards, 30% to 50%. And so we made a good effort last year to restrict the projects that would be required to have that. In this case, we talked a lot about the safety, the lives that are going to be impacted if and continue to be. And we've heard a lot about Highway 12 since I've been here. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that there was a mandate placed on our local cities, our local counties, to increase the cost of a project when you're just simply trying to make it safer for people to get, as Representative Carroll mentioned, to take alternative routes, probably burn up more greenhouse gas efforts because of safety issues, and we can't have an exception for safety, which I think we should, and we'll continue to advocate for that.
Okay, thank you, Chair Kosnick. Any further questions, comments? No? All right. Thank you for making your way down to the Capitol today, Mayor Spencer and Mr. DeRose. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we have Representative Igo. Wherever he goes, I go. All right. Back at it, the great city of Hibbing. We just wanted to make sure that you knew how to get to the testifying table and could leave. Thank you for participating in that exercise. All right. House File 3761, Representative Igo, please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I apologize for being a little tardy today. I'm running to multiple places all at once. That's what first deadlines is doing to all of us. So, Representative Spencer Igo, carrying the bill, House File 3761 for the City of Hibbing to rehabilitate old clay tile pipe infrastructure in the city. So it's a pretty straightforward project, but I really want to give emphasis to the city and the work they've been doing on this. So going back to 2013, the city really started investing in doing this through their own general funds and bonding through their own city to take care of this project. The project now has reached a point where we have to get the remaining miles of this clay pipe fixed, and that's where in front of the committee today asking for $13.6 million to fix the 33 miles that have been identified as highest priority. The City of Hibbing, I know I've talked to this committee before, is doing everything right to make sure the infrastructure for the city is there for another 100 years to continue the growth and being the hub of the Iron Range as its largest city. This state support is critical for not only the future generations of those in Hibbing, but the whole future of the Iron Range, so we can continue to have Hibbing as our hub and being our center where we all travel, commute, and play every single day. And with that, I would like to hand off to my testifier, our Mayor of Hibbing, Pete Heiduk.
All right, Mayor, please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Mayor Pete Heiduk from the City of Hibbing, and I want to thank Chair Franson, Chair Lee, and the members of the Capitol Committee for the opportunity to speak before you today. Also, I want to thank Representative Igo, who has championed for the City of Hibbing and carried this bill forward. At 186 square miles, Hibbing's the largest city geographically in the state of Minnesota. With that size come significant responsibilities to maintain our infrastructure and our sewer systems within our city. One of our most critical needs today is the rehabilitation of our sanitary sewer system. Our system was mostly built between 1920 and 1960 using mostly clay tile technology and spans more than 90 miles. After decades underground, these pipes cracking, shifting, and separating, allowing groundwater and stormwater to infiltrate our sanitary system. This extra work overloads our treatment facilities, drives up operational costs, and increases the risk of system failure. Since 2013, we have successfully rehabilitated over 25 miles of sewer line, as was mentioned, at a cost of $6 million, but we have used the most cost-effective, modern, trenchless lining technology to do this. The results speak for themselves. Wastewater flow at our treatment plant has dropped from 2.6 to 2 million gallons a day, proof that this project is working. But this job is far from finished. As was mentioned, our capital improvement plan moving forward includes finishing the final 33 miles of sewer line that still need rehabilitation, and this estimated cost of $13.6 million. For a community of our size, this is a significant financial burden. As a mayor of Hibbing, I can guarantee we are committed to doing our part. We have already made substantial investments, and we will continue to do more moving forward. But projects of this scale require partnerships with the state of Minnesota and are exactly what the state bonding programs exist. Every dollar that the state can contribute will help us continue this process forward to protect our water resources, to make our infrastructure reliable for our residents and businesses moving forward. This work may be underground, it's not pretty, it's out of sight, but it's essential to the health, safety, and economic vitality of a community. At this time, Madam Chair, thank you for this time. And if anyone would have any questions for me, committee, I will certainly answer it at this time.
All right. Representative Carroll.
Thank you. And I'll be quick, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing this. So question, I've dealt with this in Plymouth in terms of lining and stuff like this, but are newer pipes, given the age of these, Would it be more cost effective to just put in brand new pipes?
The lining technology, modern lining technology, is much more cost effective. And once the lines are cleaned, camered, only lines that are capable of being relined are done that way. So there are places where we have done full installation with new PVC pipe or new concrete pipe. But the cost effectiveness and the duration of the length of this type of technology, it's such a cost savings that it's a very efficient way to move forward.
Thank you. One more comment.
Yes, Madam Chair. Carroll.
So first time I went to Hibbing was this fall on our tour. And the best part of the tour, in addition to all the wonderful things in Hibbing, including your ice arena and the hockey museum, was unofficial side stop to Bob Dylan's home.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate those comments.
Okay, Representative Scrabble.
Do you have any of that POTICA stuff?
I did not put him up to it, but I was wondering the same.
It's a good question. It's not on me at this time, but I certainly know where to get it.
Do you know how to use the mail?
I do.
I'm just kidding. It was so delicious. So thank you for hosting us this fall. It was great. And what else? Do we have anybody else asking a question? No? We're done? Okay. Thank you so much for coming down here.
You bet.
Appreciate your time. Thank you, Representative Igo. And with that, members, we have – oh, we still have one up? Oh, gee whiz. You thought we were going to be done. I was going to skip two bills. All right. Next up, we have Representative Warwas. Right? No, Representative Bakeberg. I'll do Representative Bakeberg. Sorry. You know, I just want people to get their exercises. Okay, up, down. It's like Catholic Mass. All right. Let's see here. Prior Lake, Representative Bakeberg, please present or state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Ben Bakeberg. I have the privilege to represent Prior Lake Jordan and a portion of Shakopee. And thank you for allowing me to present House File 3515 to help the City of Prior Lake complete the final segment of Highway 13 Trail.
Okay. May I proceed?
All right.
Continue.
So this regional trail connection will fill a critical gap in the system, and as my testifiers, Mayor Briggs, will share more, this needs to be completed for safety. Right now, pedestrians, bikers, walkers, those using, they use the highway shoulder to travel because there's no alternative, so it's imperative that we fill this gap.
Did we see this project on the bonding tour? Okay, thank you.
We missed out.
That sounds very familiar to another issue that we're having. Continue on.
Very familiar, yes. So the city has worked to fund segments 1 through 5 of this project and is seeking your assistance to complete this regional infrastructure. With me is Mayor Briggs to share more about the project. Also, City Manager Jason Waddell is here as a resource if members have questions. So with that, I will turn it over to Mayor Briggs.
All right, Mayor Briggs.
Thank you so much, Chair Franz and Chair Lee, members of the Capital Investment Committee. I want to thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you and present today. Also, Representative Bakeberg, thank you so much for your authorship. My name is Kirk Briggs, and I am the mayor of Prior Lake, and I am here on behalf of the city, who's been working for many years to put in place a safety corridor alongside State Highway 13. When Highway 13 was constructed in 1960, well, it provided us with a needed, efficient motorized corridor. It also left us with some challenging topography, and there was no consideration made for joggers, pedestrians, bicycles, or other forms of transportation. Today, that design presents, as Representative Bakeberg shared, a significant safety challenge for our community. The highway runs right through the center of our town, and it effectively isolates many residential neighborhoods, requiring that residents get in their vehicles, travel out onto the corridor for simple shopping trips. Along the corridor, not only do we have 3 business districts, we also have 2 elementary schools, a high school, along the corridor. And despite this proximity, again, students and residents cannot safely walk and or bike to these destinations. Because there currently is no dedicated trail in this segment, people resorting to walking or jogging are finding themselves on the shoulder of the state highway. And it was never designed to accommodate that, as vehicles are moving greater than 50 miles an hour along this corridor. Tragically, we saw the consequences of this use in 2016 when a pedestrian attempting to cross the highway was tragically injured in front of Lakefront Park. Completing this trail segment is really one of safety. The city has committed to completing this project for many years. We've worked diligently, completing a feasibility study, breaking the trail into various segments, enabling us to come before you with our very first ever bonding request, as well as to seek other additional funds. I would direct you to the handout to provide that detail. But over the last 8 years, we have successfully completed 2.5 miles of this 4.5-mile segment. But the remaining segments are the most challenging, both in terms of topography, engineering, and also, of course, cost. Our community has made a strong commitment. We say frequently that these trails are ribbons of parkland that knit together our neighborhoods. And in this one in particular, not only will knit together those that are isolated, but also enable us to travel safely along this corridor. I want to also acknowledge that there has been support from our adjacent municipalities. Most notably, Scott County has participated along with us, as well as the cities of Savage, Credit River, and Spring Lake Township, as all municipalities would enjoy this trail completion and fulfilling the gap that currently exists. Again, thank you so much for your time and consideration. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any, does this connect to a larger trail system? Is this a feeder for any other trail system?
And who would like to take that one?
Chair Franson, committee, yes, indeed. This actually completes a gap between our Three Rivers Trail partners to the north and also to the south. So this segment in the regional trail plan was identified as being a gap, but it does close a loop between two existing trails.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Is this going to be alongside the highway? Is it in the right-of-way of the highway? Are there any new roundabouts going about in there? Because this, I mean, roundabouts are effective, but if you're a pedestrian, they're hell, I guess, is the only way to describe it.
Mayor? Chair France and committee, I can report to you that there will be no new roundabouts. We've done our roundabouts along this corridor. But the trail will exist in MnDOT State Highway right-of-way. Also, there will be other areas of right-of-way that would need to be acquired. MnDOT has worked closely with us throughout the feasibility study here.
And to follow up very quick, Madam Chair, any bridges or box culverts or anything you have to use culverts to get the trail?
Chair?
Yep, Mr. Fink.
Madam Chair, committee, there will be no box culverts per se, but there are some very significant retaining walls and some grading work to support because the topography of Highway 13 drops dramatically off to the side. So to create the space for where this trail would be offset from the travel lanes of the road, there will be a lot of structural retaining wall work.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Carroll, did you have one? No? Okay. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mayor, for the presentation. Real quickly, you have three different segments here. Should we not be able to do everything? Which one is the priority, you know, segment 2, 3, or 4? Can you let us know? Thank you.
Mayor.
Chair Lee, thank you so much for the question. This is one where completing the, I would offer up now opinion as I look down to the city manager here. The two segments that complete the ring, so you'll see the segments, one is an overpass, a pedestrian overpass, but those two segments would complete on grade that trail around the lake. So those two would step in as a priority, but I appreciate the question and the consideration relative to the sequencing in our trail.
Okay. Any further member questions? No? All right. Well, thank you so much for presenting today. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Warwas, you are finally on deck. You're welcome. St. Louis County, it's Canyon Integrated Solid Waste Management Campus. I know where Canyon is, so. Commissioner Yukovich, how are you today?
Oh, my goodness. I am fine as frogs here.
I am so happy to have you in front of my committee again.
It's good to see you all. I enjoyed your visit to the range last time around, so always nice to come and visit.
All right. Representative Warwas, you may state your name for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Good,
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Representative Cal Warwis from the Iron Range, District 7B, co-chairs Franz and Lee and committee members. We're here today to talk about House File 573, which is the Canyon Integrated Solid Waste Management Campus. And this investment will be an expansion of the critical work that St. Louis County is already doing at the campus in Virginia, northeastern Minnesota, not far from where I live, actually. And let me just say that talking about municipal solid waste isn't anyone's favorite subject, except for my commissioner, Keith Nelson, but he couldn't be here today. But a huge reason for his enthusiasm is their plans to mitigate PFAS in landfill waste. And in his stead, we have St. Louis County Commissioner Mike Jugovich and the Director of Environmental Services, Dave Fink. So I'll hand it over to them.
And who would like to proceed? Yep. Okay, Mr. Fink.
Thank you, Madam Chair Franson, Chair Lee, committee members. Thank you so much for your time and consideration today. Our bonding request is the number one priority for St. Louis County, which focuses on treatment of landfill wastewater or leachate for PFAS. This has been the number one priority even before most folks knew what the acronym stood for. Mm-hmm. Because of the wide application of PFAS in products used, then discarded by consumers, the EPA and the MPCA have identified landfills as a contributor of PFAS pollution to both groundwater and receiving surface waters. Historically, St. Louis County, through its Environmental Services Department, has a long history of ensuring permit compliance and environmental protection at its regional landfill in Virginia, on-site leachate management facility, and other waste collection sites it manages. Recently, the MPCA required 7 counties and the WLSSD, or Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, to develop a Northeast Minnesota Regional Solid Waste Management Plan instead of individual county plans. As addressed in the plan, St. Louis County signed a 10-year agreement with 4 of the counties and WLSSD, or Resource Renew as they're now called, ensuring intermediate-term management for the majority of the MSW from within the region at the Virginia landfill. Anticipating increased leachate generation resulting from a significantly larger volume of MSW, the county constructed a state-of-the-art leachate system using an advanced reverse osmosis system at the landfill to be online this year. The county chose reverse osmosis based on many years of pilot project research conducted at the landfill, resulting in the on-site reduction and, in some cases, the elimination of PFAS compounds within the landfill leachate having associated drinking water standards. Unfortunately, unlike the Virginia landfill, which will treat leachate on-site, the majority of the 35,000 gallons per day of untreated leachate generated by other landfills within the Northeast region enters the receiving waters of Lake Superior by way of the St. Louis River, essentially untreated. Also, per the plan, St. Louis County is working with the MPCA, neighboring counties, and WLSSD to address future long-term waste management needs within the region. A site located in New Independence Township near Canyon, Minnesota, was selected to address long-term needs for the following reasons. The site is centrally located on Highway 53 between the two major waste areas, Duluth and the Range Cities. The site is home of an existing industrial waste landfill. The site will accommodate MSW landfill size to meet the region's future MSW needs for generations and the acceptance of over 250 online closed landfills that exist across St. Louis County and old dumps within the region posing environmental risk. The site will be sized to treat and manage MSW leachate as well as leachate from operating landfills in the region and MPCA closed landfills currently transporting to municipal wastewater treatment plants not designed to treat PFAS and other contaminants of concern. The proposed leachate treatment facility will address the 3 strategic goals identified in the MPCA's PFAS blueprint. The facility will manage and clean up PFAS pollution from active and closed landfills within the region and prevent PFAS pollution by treating the leachate on-site instead of transport to a wastewater treatment facility for pass-through into Lake Superior. We ask for your support for this crucial need that is critical for water quality protection and responsible solid waste management in northeastern Minnesota for future generations. And with that, I just want to thank you again for the time and consideration, and I will stand for any questions you may have.
All right. Do we have any questions? Yes, Representative Scraba. He's excited.
I am. This is it's actually a great project. Mainly because it does benefit my district that I represent.
Spoken like a true ranger.
Yes. Couchiching County is trying to get, because they live in a swamp, and it's really hard for them to get landfills. And Cook County right now, they transfer everything to Superior, 4 trips a day. Mm-hmm. And this is a lot shorter. So, but more importantly, what the plan is to take these old landfills that are leaching still and taking them and putting them in this site and then managing it. It's really long range. It's a great think out. We're helping literally a very undeveloped areas, where these landfills were put. And I can think of the one in Ely. It used to be a swamp, and now it's a big hill. So where do you think all the leaching goes now? It goes into the water table, which eventually goes into the Rainy River, the whole watershed thing. So if we can help start at this level, getting cleaned up, I'm all for it. I've been supporting this project from the beginning. I think it'll set the stage, if it hasn't already, for other projects like it to do it, because it does collect the PFAS. And now as technology is moving forward, we're learning how to deal with the PFAS. So I think we moved ahead with this project. So thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Did you either of you see the presentation that we did here in Capital Investment on the PFAS? March 3rd?
No?
Oh, you might want to watch that hearing. It was very insightful, educational, and scary at the same time. Mm-hmm. Terrifying at times. Okay. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I really appreciate the regional approach to this. I'm just curious, for the other 6 counties, are they planning to put in money on the front end, or is it mostly more of contracting with you guys once this is built out?
And who would like to take that one? Mr. Fink?
Yep.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Chair Lee, right now we are contracting, so the revenue that we're taking in from that will help subsidize, you know, the rest of the campus, really. So we have buy-in with contracts, and then eventually we're hoping it's a kind of more of a joint powers ownership and operation of this future facility. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? No? All right. Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Fink and Mr. Yugovich, Commissioner Yugovich, and, Representative Warwas,
quick
final
closing
thoughts.
Comment, legislators, co-chairs, everyone is welcome to join us at Duluth and St. Louis County Days, which is tomorrow at the Intercontinental, and St. Louis County will be there. I mean, obviously, it's named after them. So many of these fine folks will be there if you want to talk more about MSW or just see everything else our great region has to offer.
Okay, Mr. Yugovich.
Madam Chair, thank you, Chair Lee and members. Just something to go over with this project briefly. We are taking forever chemicals out, and we are treating. We are pro-clean water. We are pro-clean environment. We are 7 counties working together, regional approach. All the boxes are being checked for the things mm-hmm. that we feel are important as progress for all of these chemicals that have been ignored for many years. So here we are cleaning it up, and we would appreciate any help we could get. It's very satisfying knowing that the regional approach is really working on this.
All right. And with that, we have, let's see here. Oh, we don't have a meeting on Thursday, which is very sad because what is the holiday? It's Eid. Yes, we are celebrating Eid on Thursday. So we will not be here, but have no fear. If you were excited to hear Chair Lee, he will be presenting on Tuesday instead. So we will be flip-flopping. I will now have Thursdays, which is kind of sad because I really like starting off the week strong. But I guess we'll just end it with me next week. And so our next meeting will be March 24th, and Representative Chair Lee will have the gavel. So with that, we are adjourned.